The Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
All right, we're back for another episode of Midwest Swing. You can find us on Twitter at Midwest Swing Pod. We are part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. You can find Cold Omaha on Twitter. It's actually at Zone Coverage MN. I am your host, Brandon Warren. You can find me on Twitter at Brandon_Warren. And it's just a two-man show today. I am joined by producer slash co-host Tom Schreier at TSchreier3 on Twitter. And we're coming off eating a little bit of lunch here. We're going to break down the Twins for a little bit. Incidentally, Twins are playing Detroit right now. So it's kind of a weird dynamic, and maybe whatever we say won't still apply. But obviously, off to a 5-1 start. The three-game sweep, you know, when the Twins were here in Target Field, I covered the first two games. You covered the third one, then taking 2-3 on the south side of Chicago before yesterday's off day. The Twins at 5-1, best record in the American League Central. And Tom, I don't think anybody saw this coming from the Minnesota Twins, even if it is a small sample size.
I know, it is kind of funny. I didn't realize the historical implications of the start. I mean, I with baseball's randomness, I thought, I mean, you go back to first time for a 4-0 start for the Twins is 87, right? And then I think to go back to like 1968 to see a 5-0 start. Obviously, as I wrote, let's not read too much into this because I don't know if that, I don't think that means you're winning the World Series, right? But it's, you know, kind of fun nonetheless. You hope as a writer you're covering meaningful games. And I think that's actually what's best for the young players too, knowing that every game matters and that maybe in some sense, as I wrote on the website, they kind of get a do-over from last year. I don't know if you remember this. I had to look it up. So they started 0-9.
Yep.
Then won their next four straight.
I remember 4-9.
And I kind of wonder, obviously things really came off the rails and maybe it doesn't matter. What if you start 4-0 that season and then lose 9 straight? It's still going to come off as bad, right? You never want to lose 9 straight games.
Yeah.
But is this seen as, man, you know, the Twins are building off of the 83-win season and, you know, they had this weird slump to start. Because we see it every day. We go in the locker room and it's why we take video. We want people to go on the website and see facial expressions and just those little nuances you get that you don't get if you just... Even if we transcribed everything, you know, you wouldn't get the nuances of what they're saying. And feel free to disagree with me. I just think you see the ups and downs, and you saw what Torii Hunter brought, for example, and he's not completely the difference between 83 wins and 59. But the way I described it in the piece is it's nice to have that little incentive every day to win. It's not that the guys don't want to, but I think that little happiness and joy they got out of the dance party in the smoke room, and it was fun to be part of in the capacity we were. And maybe this year, hopefully you get something authentic in that the reward for winning a game that day is that it's meaningful and you're still in the race for the Central.
Well, I know that when it was 5 losses in a row to start last season, you know, ultimately, swelling up to 9 before they got that first win, I did caution patience. But I do think an 0-9 start is obviously going to be more sustainable for a tough season than a 5-1 start is for a good season. With that said, has the 5-1 start changed your outlook for this team at all? You know, where did you start this season as far as what you thought the Twins were capable of? And has that changed at all for you?
So I think I said it on the show, and I continue to reference Midwest Swing, so I hope I did, that I thought this has really been a 74-win team the past 2 years, and it probably was this year. What I mean by that is I think the 83-win season, I think they greatly overachieved. And really, it was until game 161, although as my editor, you noticed, I think I wrote 181.
Yeah, you said 181. I was thinking, was this guy counting spring training too?
I include everything. No, possible. I think I probably hit the wrong key. I don't know why I haven't. But, or I just had a brain fart.
Good carpenter never blames his tools. Tom.
Right, right.
gotcha.
Got me good there. But no, I think... now I'm distracted. Where was I going with this? First season, I think they greatly overachieved, and it was, you know, fun to see in Molitor's first year that the team, all, you know, was in the playoff hunt really until that last season against, or the last series against the Royals. And the first or the second year, I think enough things came off the tracks that it just derailed everything. I mean, I don't think it's one single element. I don't even think it's the 0-9 start, because that's such an insignificant portion of a major league season. But we've seen what 1 month can do. I mean, you go back to the year, the 2 years ago when they won 83 games. I believe they were 20-7 in May, and then they were under 500, under 500, and then 500 for the next 3 months after that. Even on the broadcasts, which are tend to be pro Twins, obviously, and then just reading both nationally and locally, everyone knew that the Twins were kind of getting breaks in May, right? But they added up enough where it kind of held, you know, they could hold water, I guess, throughout the rest of the season. I don't know if they have a 20-7 May in them, but I think a hot start maybe gives you hope that where I thought they were a 74-win team, and again, Vegas agreed, 74.5, I think, is their over-under for wins. And I thought maybe at best they'd be where you thought they'd be at, in that 80-win range. Now I'm kind of thinking maybe they'll finish between 74 and 80. And again, it's really early to predict. But maybe they have them in that best case scenario. They're an 86-win team. Again, I think it's too early to say that. But I guess it doesn't seem as far out now, given that with a very flawed team, they found ways to win early in the season.
Now, you've only spent 1 day around the team, but did you get a different vibe from this team maybe than last year's as far as clubhouse environment?
Yeah, you know, and in fact, I actually, you know, I talked to a couple players about this. You could tell Max Kepler, first of all, I like that he kind of asserted himself a little bit. We have it on film where he's saying, you know, we know we're going to lose, and I'm curious how we're going to react to that. I think for a young player to say that is a positive sign. In some ways, they're saying, look, my voice counts too, and I can speak in some ways on behalf of the team, or at least on behalf of myself, and say something not super controversial, but talk about the team losing during a winning streak, and that's okay. I talked, and it was mostly off the record, just with Phil Hughes, and I asked, you know, just generally, I was like, is it a different feel? And he said, absolutely. There was a handful of other guys, whether it was on there, it was so chaotic because you have all the cameras in there, you know, as you know, the local TV deploys all their people for the day games. You had a rush of local media as well. It was just chaotic. Everyone was kind of talking at once and stuff, but the little snippets I got, everyone said that. And I think that's positive for a baseball team too. It really has to be terrible in the middle or end of the season if you realize everyone doesn't care anymore.
Right.
The Vikings are playing, the NFL has started, and people may here even be kind of projecting a little bit as to how the Wild and Wolves or how the NBA and the NHL will pan out. People will just forget about you, and then you add a Major League Soccer team to the equation. Obviously, they're not doing great, but you know, if the Minnesota United goes on a little run at the end, that may take focus away from the Twins too. So if anything, beyond just kind of the morale and that feeling, I'm sure you remember that, of going in the clubhouse. Obviously, there was no smoke, but going the clubhouse with the smoke machine after they had all been dancing, there is completely a different vibe. And there was, I think, traces of that, let alone, I think it's just, as much as the team most, you know, players will say they don't, the media doesn't matter, or sometimes they'll be anti-media, there has to be a feeling in there that when this many people care, again, there's that incentive to win every day. There's that reward, if anything, for winning that day that you wouldn't have in a 59-win season, or at least towards the end of it.
Now, with this season being Molitor on a one-year deal, obviously the managers prefer not to do that. It isn't necessarily a year-to-year thing. Like we said, Ron Gardner managed
seven two-year
deals.
Yeah.
What kind of job do they? What kind of job does he have to do this year in terms of the team? Maybe it's tied to wins. Maybe it's tied to progression.
Yeah.
What do you think has to happen for him to save his job moving forward? Because obviously, I'm sure that Thad Levine and Derek Falvey, somewhere in their minds, or maybe even written down somewhere, have a list of guys they would look at. Assuming
they
had
to
look outside, I think you have to. And you know, you are going
to
want to bring your guy in if you aren't convinced that the guy existing can get the job done. Molitor is getting the luxury of a 1 year chance to prove himself, which I think a lot of places won't do in terms of
they have a regime change.
Right.
Yep.
What do you think Molitor has to do or prove in the year that he's got left on his contract to get a new deal?
I think the scale looks something like this. If you make the playoffs, he's in for probably another 2-year contract, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think if you achieve 500 and you see improvements from the key cogs, which obviously are Bucks and Snow, and then I would throw Rosario Kepler in there, and then definitely kind of what Polanco does, and maybe if a guy like John Ryan Murphy becomes part of the equation, although he seems pretty low on the totem pole right now. But, you know, I look at the key two guys and then kind of your Rosarios, Polancos, Keplers. If those guys are playing well and the team's 500, I think it makes it really hard to move them on, right? Move on from him. Because I think a two-year contract really is, for a manager, is a one-year deal. So, you know, they could fire him in the middle of that season or at the end of that season, and they're not going to think twice of it. I think that gets him a job. I think where it becomes more sketchy is if they round out into that 74-win mark, and you see ups and downs from Snow and Buxton. I think they're definitely going to bring in a new guy. I think they're going to bring in someone who's probably will present a plan to be like, this is how I will improve Buxton offensively. This is what I will do with Snow defensively. These are the pieces I want to keep around. These are the ones I want to move. And then the other question is how like Dozier and Maurer factor in there. Right. And we haven't even really touched the pitching staff, but, in terms of the position players, can Maurer get on base? What about, you know, what's Dozier's power? Because
as of yet, Dozier hasn't even hit a home run yet.
Yeah, so in the next regime is going to have to think about, or this regime, I should say, going forward, they're going to have to think about, do you really want like 30-plus-year-old Dozier when Polanco seems like he could kind of slot in there in the future?
Especially with Nick Gordon off to a hot start at AA.
Yeah, and I noticed that. I mean, just reading through a couple of minor league reports, I think he was 3-for-4 one of those days, and like he's hit 2 walk-offs now or something like that.
Yeah, I think he's got 2 home runs, and I think
so we know how far out he might be, just because you see the gap between AAA or even AA and the majors.
But he also has the
moxie,
pedigree, the moxie of a guy who might jump multiple levels. Yeah, he's
you would
got
hope one of these guys has got to do it.
Baseball Reference says 1 home run right now, but even if I know he hit one in a preseason game as well,
I think he had a walk off like single in one of those games.
Single. Yeah, but anyway, yeah. Showing more power now, which will be interesting because that's the one part of his game that just has not been there.
If he can stick at shortstop at the majors, they drafted him well.
Yep, I think so too. Although, again, it is certainly possible that they might have liked to have gone in another direction. Granted, Alex Jackson, I think it was taken the pick right after him, has already been traded from the Mariners. And so it's not like the Twins necessarily missed on Nick Gordon. It's just that if players went after that, that might have been a better fit. It's something to think about. But
yeah,
it would look nice to have Gordon and Polanco up the middle.
Yeah, and it's something the left side of the infield will have to think about going forward. I just how he manages Maurer, because that, you know, Falvey and Levine also are going to have to think, what happens when Maurer's contract's up
after next year.
Yeah. Yep. So, with the pitching staff specifically, I think, I don't feel like their fates are as tied to that. I think it's tied to guys we don't see right now. I think it's, well, Mejia's up, but what Mejia gives you, because, you know, the last year they traded for him. But what did they get out of Berrios? What did they get out of Gonsalves? What did they get out of Cole Stewart? Who am I missing in the minor leagues right now that should be, you know, and then the Nick Birdies, Jake
Fernando
Reeds.
Romero will eventually get there. I think he's at Double H Chattanooga right now.
But you know, I look at those relievers too, Reed, Birdie.
Chegua,
yeah.
Hildenberger.
So I think he's more tied to the fate of the young pitchers. The Falvey Levine regime is more tied to them, because if you don't want Hughes to be part of your future, he doesn't have to be. Really, if you don't want Gibson to be, that was someone else's project, right? Mm-hmm. I think, you know, Santana's probably only got so much left, although he seems a little ageless in the way he pitches, but and, you know, so you look at the guys they have up now. I think he's less tied to the pitching staff. I think it's more if Berrios doesn't pan out, all of a sudden you get a little panicky, right?
Yeah.
The way I look at it, a gathering of those guys has to. And it's been too long. Didn't we think Birdie was going to be up right away?
Within a year, I thought.
He was a college draft pick, right?
And now he's been hurt and all that. It's been one of those deals where the expectation for him to move fast. Same with Tyler J, who would have moved quickly.
Tyler J was the guy I forgot about.
And he's out for the entire month of April, probably.
Okay.
So it's going to be a while before he's up and running at Chattanooga as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, I just look down the line there. I think you know, that makes sense, right? Their fate is more tied to these young pitchers because the Twins, at the end of the day, have to stop signing. And no, Santana panned out and Nolasco didn't, but those kind of contracts are just bad. They're just, I just think they're...
No, the odds of those, there's no ceiling and it's all floor.
I mean, you can't base a franchise around them, I guess is what I'm
getting at. I mean, you're never going to contend with guys like that doing anything more than being your number five starter, and that's more than what they've asked of these guys. You know, that's the production they've gotten on the aggregate, if you were to add all them together, most likely, but it hasn't been enough to actually work out for them.
So I think, you know, when you look at it, I really think it's going to come down to Kepler just seems to have a mentality and a swing that would tell you he's consistently good every year. He doesn't have that high-end upside, I don't think. But I think he's a piece of the puzzle. I really didn't think Rosario was, but he seems, and you have a better eye for this, but it seems like he's laying off a few more pitches and being a little more meticulous at his in his at-bats.
It's going to take time to see how he progresses this year, but if he has another year that's basically a carbon copy of his last two, then it's probably not likely that he's anything more than a guy who's filling in for a better player to come up eventually.
A fourth outfielder.
Yeah, whether it's Zach Granite or someone in the deeper future, whoever that might be, or a free agent.
He has the talent. I feel like it's in the, and that's, you can say that of every basically major league player, but him especially, it seems like he has the raw skills.
Clearly.
I think he needs to think the game a little better. But that'd be a crowning achievement of kind of the Falvey-Levine regime, right? That they kind of figured him out. So I don't write Molitor off. And I think tactically he makes mistakes occasionally. Even I pick up on that. I'm not like a baseball whiz. And I think some of that's maybe an experience with managing. Now in your third year, you can't use that as much anymore. But temperamentally, he seems to be the right guy in the terms of I think he's over himself as a player and is not going to compare the skill level of his players to himself or the best players he played with.
Well, he understands too what struggling means for a young player. Not that they're not trying or not that they're not capable of learning, but that struggling is a part of all, pretty much, you know, every non Joe Mauer caliber prospect's coming of age in the game is that they're going to struggle.
And then I think the, so I see pros and cons with him, but I see enough pros that I think he could, if he does enough, they'll stick with him. The other truth of the matter is, don't most sabermetric people go the manager itself, as long as they're not a detriment, or if they're a detriment or they're Joe Maddon, basically everyone in the middle of that is kind of, I mean, I think what would be best is either Molitor develops into, or they go get someone like Tito, like Maddon. There's a handful of those guys I think are big difference makers, but
yeah. I think that it's a floating range based on two types of team. Obviously, Joe Maddon isn't going to take the modern-day Minnesota Twins from the last few years and manage them into contenders. But you might get five games better or three games better or something based on matchups and all that. It's hard to say exactly.
And with Francona, I think it's more how he communicates and kind of his...
Yeah, his baseball know-how helps a lot, too.
Yeah, but like I said, I think I see pros and cons with Molitor, and I think this year's big for him. I think it's monumentally bigger for Snow and Buxton.
Yeah.
And really, I think if you're Joe Mauer, you got to go, whether it's here in Minnesota or elsewhere, what's my role going forward?
Yeah.
Players at that age, throw the concussion out the door for a second here. Players at that age have to reinvent themselves a little bit. There's just very few people that, you know, are the same guy from beginning to end. You know, so I think, I'm just kind of curious what his
future looks like.
What his future looks like.
Yeah, and if it isn't in Minnesota, maybe it's retirement. I don't see him moving or playing anywhere else, but...
No.
But we'll see. Now, the early season identity of this offense... I had the coughs today.
Oh, good.
The early season identity of this offense has been fly balls, it's been walks, it has been not that much power. The modern way of an offense is to hit the ball in the air, and you'll hear a lot of swing coaches and hitting coaches say that you got to hit the ball in the air because that's where doubles, triples, and home runs come from. And pitchers want you to hit it on the ground. Well, the offense seems to be embracing that. At least they were through the first three or four games when I checked the data. I'll probably do something else to break that down here in the next few days. But that seems to be the early season identity. Jason Castro off to a good start with seven strikeouts and one walk. Jorge Polanco off to a nice start, Miguel Sano off to a nice start, but it has been the haves and the have-nots for this Twins offense so far. Who has stood out to you so far as having a good start, Tom, and who do you see picking it up as the season goes on?
Yeah, Castro's the obvious one, right? A little, maybe shades of his all-star season, you said, back.
Well, and then some, but hopefully there's something unlocked there, because if that is the case, if you're paying him for his defense and he gives you anything offensively, he becomes an incredible bargain very quickly.
Yeah. In terms of positives, it seems like Rosario is a little more patient at the plate, or at least seems to have developed a little bit better.
Yeah, two walks. I mean, I think it was 2-1 game.
I mean, it's more just the less absurd swings or whatever.
That might take more than 23 plate appearances for that to really show through in terms of results. So I think that the process might be a little better there.
Yeah, I think Polanco looks adept. Now, again, I'd have to think about his
last he's sitting third games. Today. I think he's done a nice job.
Yeah.
Actually, I think he's done a really nice job moving forward defensively as well. He seems to be more competent, and not only competent at shortstop, but capable, you know, not comfortable. You know,
yeah.
He's not only making the plays, but he's looking not that shaky out there. And I see a guy at the plate who never seems to be, you know, he seems unflappable. If he can become that guy defensively as well, that's a really nice player.
Yeah, and so unfortunately with this team, what we haven't seen stands out to me. You mentioned Dozier's home run. It's early on. I guess I'm not too concerned with that. Maurer's on base is not great. Is it still stubbed 300? It was when I wrote my article, or at least last time I checked. But, you know, he's drawn walks. He did have a hit in the
The
last Chicago game where he kind of broke the tie, right? Or first score. Maurer had an at bat where I think he started the scoring off for the Twins.
Oh yeah, 0-2 pitch that he stroked into left center.
Yeah. You know, you look at his numbers and they're disappointing early. Again, I think sometimes you can make too much out of that stuff.
Oh yeah, it's too early to read in anybody individually.
Yeah,
except like Robbie Grossman looks like he's doing basically Robbie Grossman stuff. Everybody else is gonna look totally different by the end of the season.
Yeah, I mean, and then the one big one is Buxton's strikeouts. And I think maybe putting him in the three spot there probably was a little over aggressive, probably a reaction to a good spring.
I think part of it is they wanted to show him up front that they wanted to give him trust. And I don't know how much that matters. I mean, I really don't, if it matters
maybe
one way or the other.
Maybe it's just show him what it's like, give him a little taste of it, and then, you know, have him want to go back there. I'm fine with him as an ambush hitter. I think you can have success there, but he doesn't then project to a... I don't think he's a leadoff guy no matter what.
No, he's not.
I think showing a little power and stuff, he could become a middle of the order guy. I forgot to mention on the positive side, Sano looks like he's...
looks like a monster.
...doing Sano things. So it is funny, the dichotomy early on, right? You have a handful of these guys not doing much or disappointing, and then you have Sano being a monster, Castro on down the line there, Polanco. But I don't see any cause for alarm yet, which you shouldn't with this winning. I don't think it's sustainable. I think they're kidding themselves if it's, you know, oh yeah, we can roll this lineup, you know, out all year and it's going to work. But
they're going to score runs, though, I think. I think they're going to be good at that.
No, I think it's more, it's going to be a different cast of characters, right? Hopefully, in the minors, you know, you look at guys, you know, if people are just looking at a few guys to target, what's John Ryan Murphy doing? Berrios. I mean, how far out do you think Cole Stewart and Gonsalves are?
Yeah, I mean, Stewart's maybe a year and Gonsalves maybe a half to a three quarters of a year.
Yeah, but a guy to keep an eye on. And then kind of your Vargas Park.
Park put on the 7-day disabled list at Rochester today, by the way, with a hamstring. So if you have any designs on getting Byung-ho Park up here in Twin Stripes, actually they're not wearing stripes anymore, I guess.
Right.
Up here in Twins colors, it's probably not going to happen very soon because he's on the shelf for a week. And then beyond that is going to need time to get back up to speed.
So I think the point widely is that it's going to be a different cast of characters and they're going to have to make those moves sooner than later. But to kind of not only have a good start, but get a good start with probably not your optimal team, if that makes sense, is a really, really good sign.
So how about on the pitching staff side of things before we wrap this up? What have you seen that you've really liked? Obviously, a couple good starts from Irvin Santana, 0.69 ERA.
Yep.
pretty nice there. And Phil Hughes looked good. Kyle Gibson, he had five strikeouts in five innings, but got into a little bit of trouble with a couple home runs allowed.
Yeah.
Santiago, obviously very good. Mejia got roughed up a little bit in the loss in Chicago. But the bullpen, other than, you know, Justin Haley's been so-so, and Craig Breslow's faced three batters and only gotten one out, the bullpen's looked pretty good.
Yeah.
I'm impressed with Taylor Rogers basically doing Taylor Rogers stuff. But Ryan Pressly, I think, is probably my best, in my opinion, the best arm out there. And he's done a nice job so far. And I think the bullpen, they're kind of piecing it together so far, and it's been good.
Yeah, I think with Rogers, he has the role in there. You know, one note, too, is that Alex Wimmers, who I think a lot of people thought should have been coming north with the team, gave up three solo home runs, right? I believe in one outing in the minors.
Oh, I didn't see that, but it wouldn't surprise me. I saw him called a pitcher with promise in an article that I read, and I was like,
I mean, I think it's a first round pick that you'd like to get something out of.
Yeah, that's but let's not forget this guy is like older than Michael Tonkin, had all kinds of control issues, and was a 5-year free agent twice. You know, he's not the kind of guy that you need to push anyone aside for, and that's not to besmirch the path that he's made to get where he is today, because it's remarkable that he made it to the big leagues at all. But he's not the kind of guy you need to prioritize.
So I think with Ryan Pressly, he's exactly what you want to get out of a Rule 5 pick.
Mm-hmm.
Always had the raw stuff, seems to kind of harness it. I think Haley, when you look at the one game, you know, they lost, it's disappointing that Mejia couldn't give him more. Just because they traded for him, he's a big lefty. You would hope, my hope for him is kind of to be that fourth or fifth starter, right? Kind of a guy.
I think that's the goal.
And I think if that happens for a few years, it justifies the Nunez trade. Not that that was like a blockbuster that has to be justified, but with Haley, I think he did his job. I don't know what is.
I just don't see him having the stuff that pops like Pressly. You know, Presley's
stuff is good.
Yeah, when Pressly came up, his stuff was good. He just didn't get strikeouts. He needed time to figure it out.
Yeah.
I just don't know if Haley at 26 years old has that in the future.
I mean, maybe I'm trying to think of a guy. He was with the Twins forever and then was on the Indians, I think, last year.
Jeff Manship.
Not Manship, although maybe that's a better comparison. The guy from Florida. I'm completely blanking on
the guy from Florida?
Yeah, he was like, I believe he grew up there. That's a ton of baseball players, but
I think it was Carl Pavano when he went.
He was like a converted starter. I don't know.
But you got me.
Yeah, no, I'm trying to think of
because Jeff Manship's the only guy I'm thinking of.
Yeah. Either way, it just seems like Haley seems at best to be like a long reliever that.
Yeah.
You can have it, and I don't know what Tonkin's future is. He just seems he has a fastball, but
you know if the cutter does anything for him. You know, it could be a deal where he could get some more grounders and be more valuable. But everything is there for a competent big league pitcher. It just doesn't make any sense to me that it hasn't clicked for him yet. The big fastball, the strikeouts, just, you know, he gives up some home runs, which I understand is not great. But I don't understand how he hasn't managed to put it together just a little bit better than he has by this point. And so, actually, I made a pretty interesting comparison last night that he's a lot like Neftali Feliz, who everyone wanted the Twins to sign in the offseason.
Yeah.
Did you figure out who the pitcher was?
I'm looking it up.
So anyway, Neftali Feliz obviously basically gave up a ton of home runs, had a lot of strikeouts, had a lot of walks. But where he differed from Tonkin was a very low batting average on balls in play, which pitchers don't have that much influence over. And then a strand rate, which is basically when you have guys on base, do you keep them on base or do you allow them to score? Pitchers have some control over that, I believe, but not a ton. And so, basically, they were the same pitcher as in terms of things they could control. They both had like a 4.50 FIP, which is fielding independent pitching. Again, focusing on things pitchers can control. Everybody wanted to give this Neftali Feliz, you know, $5.5 million deal to close for the Twins this year. And it's like, hang on a second. You wouldn't have Michael Tonkin close. Why do you want to go get a guy who looks a lot like him pitch-wise?
Yeah.
And give him a shot. I never understood that. And yeah, he might be the first guy jettisoned if they need to go get, you know, another bat. Eventually, they're going to have to go get another bat. There's no question about that. Now, whether that's Kenny Vargas, when he's healthy, or I wouldn't say healthy, he's healthy, but once he gets up to speed swing-wise, you know, when his swing looks good and when they're ready for that, you know, maybe they need to go get him, especially if Robbie Grossman needs to play more outfield or doesn't handle the DH role particularly well. But, you did mention Mejia. One thing I wanted to ask, how long do you let him go before you replace him with Berríos? Now, I'm not saying he's going to go 1 2/3 innings every start, but what if he does flounder for the first 3-4 starts? Is May 1st kind of like a line in the sand for you where if Mejia...
I think that's fair. I think it's... I think it's
3-4 starts.
By the way, it was Anthony Swarzak who I was
thinking. Oh, yeah, you should have said the Sasquatch Hunter. he's actually in the White Sox bullpen right now, so we'll see him in Minnesota this weekend.
Yeah, no, that's Anthony Swarzak who I was thinking of.
Saturday's a rematch of Quintana Santana, by the way.
Interesting. No, sorry, what was Berríos and Mejia?
Yeah.
I prefer Berríos bumps him, right? That it's not Mejia's so bad we have to
get okay,
Berríos.
So but if Mejia turns around and throws 14 shutout innings in a row, lowers the ERA to 4.0 over the next 4 starts, you're not bumping him.
No, I think May 1st is fair, and I think it's more on Berríos. I think he's too good for AAA at this point. He needs to just put up the number.
Yeah. Tyler Duffy in the bullpen before we go, your quick thoughts.
I think it's where he belongs.
I think he's going to do a really nice job, and I think if they want to move things around where they want their best reliever not closing, Kinsler makes sense. I think Kinsler puts out fires in the sixth inning with a double play necessary or something like that. Duffy could be your closer. He's got the stuff, and if you don't want to put him in a spot where you're exposing him, or if you're going to have him in a spot where you want to be able to use him and still have him give you value, but you want to use guys in situations where they're going to be more competent, I think his stuff is going to pop enough to the point where he can help you as the closer. I don't think it's going to happen, but I think it could be useful.
No, that makes sense. I have no other thoughts. Anthony Swarzak tripped me up, man.
Sasquatch Hunter. Well, that's all we got for you this week. I am probably going to do a Periscope simulcast tonight. A little on that. If you are watching the Periscope simulcast, send the questions to my Twitter account @Brandon_Warren. Do not put them in the Periscope app because I probably won't see them and probably won't answer them. So tweet me @Brandon_Warren. Watch the Periscope simulcast of Midwest Swing. It's a daily podcast in addition to our weekly pod. Check us out on the Cold Omaha Podcast Network.